Hi, Jerry Mayhew. This is For the Record program number 1467. Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, Part 2. This is being recorded on December 21st of the year 2024. Again, the 64 gigabyte, we have too much information for the 32 gigabyte flash drive, but the 64 gigabyte flash drive containing all of my printed, my life's printed and recorded work is now available. It also contains a mini library of old anti-fascist books on easy to download, PDF files. And again, I think that, this will sound, you know, corny as hell, but I think as sentient beings, we have an obligation to preserve the record of what has gone wrong for those generations that come afterward, assuming there are generations that come afterward. And there certainly is a massive effort to rewrite history. We'll be going into that in a big way here. Again, I get no money whatsoever from that. It is available for a nominal tax-deductible fee. There are links both at the top of each For the Record program and each written food for thought description that will enable you to get that flash drive. And once again, this is my entire life's work. I'm in my 46th year on the air, and it is all available for a nominal tax-deductible fee. I get no money whatsoever from that. Now, we have been reading from an article by Alan McLeod from Consortium News of December 18th of 2024. U.S. Congress revives Cold War tactics with new anti-communism school curriculum. And this talks about a new bill which is now apparently going to pass the Senate that talks about the it completely rewrites history in a pro-fascist, basically a pro-fascist way. Again, the bill comes, it was created by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, that is a direct offshoot of the OUNB, and again, there's a fascist organization with a history that heavily overlaps the Galen milieu and the World Anti-Communist League. But concluding with the conclusion of Alan McLeod's article, there are some signs that Washington is slowly moving towards a new McCarthyist era. President-elect Donald Trump, there are signs that Washington is slowly moving towards a new McCarthyist era. President-elect Donald Trump, whose lawyer in the 1970s and 80s was McCarthy counsel Roy Cohn, for example, has promised to carry out mass deportations of leftists once he becomes president, stating, quote, I will order my government to deny entry to all communists and all Marxists. Those who come to join our country must love our country. We don't want them if they want to destroy our country. So we're going to be keeping foreign, Christian-hating communists, socialists, and Marxists out of America. At the end of the day, either the communists destroy America or we destroy the communists, unquote, he explained. But he also stated that American citizens espousing anti-capitalist views would be purged, quote, my question is, what are we going to do with the ones that are already here, that grew up here? I think we have to pass a new law for them, unquote, he said. That Trump would actually deport millions of American citizens en masse appears too drastic a step right now, but it is clear that both Democrats and Republicans are serious in their anti-communist convictions. Therefore, the crucial Communism Impeachment Act will likely only be the start of this campaign. Now, again, one of the things that we noted is that Martin Selner, who is part of the general milieu, with the re-migration efforts by the Trump anti-immigrant, unquote, or anti-migrant blitzkrieg. He is associated with the AFP, and Donald Trump Elon Musk is now posting social media missives saying that the AFP is the only hope for Germany. I'm going to read this conclusion of the article one more time because it is really, really important. There are some signs that Washington is slowly moving towards a new McCarthyist era. President-elect Donald Trump, whose lawyer in the 1970s and 1980s was McCarthy counsel Roy Cohn, for example, has promised to carry out mass deportations of leftists once he becomes president, stating, quote, "I will order my government to deny entry to all communists and all Marxists. Those who come to join our country must love our country. We don't want them if they want to destroy our country. So we're going to be keeping foreign Christian-hating communists, socialists, and Marxists out of America. At the end of the day, either the communists destroy America or we destroy the communists," unquote, he explained. But he also stated that American citizens espousing anti-capitalist views would be purged. Quote, "My question is, what are we going to do with the ones that are already here, that grew up here? I think we have to pass a new law for them," unquote, he said. That Trump would actually deport millions of American citizens en masse appears like too drastic a step right now, but it is clear that both Democrats and Republicans are serious in their anti-communist convictions. Therefore, the crucial Communism Teaching Act will likely only be the spur of this campaign. Well, yes, indeed. I would state that the program itself is, well, it is a stepping stone towards something much more profound. And I think when Alan McLeod says, well, it appears like too drastic a step right now, yeah, well, this is paving the way for that drastic step. And that is one of the things that I think we really need to be aware of. Now, the next article comes from the Ottawa Citizen, and I would note that the author here, David Pugliese, P-U-G-L-I-E-S-E, is being read, David, in an emphatic fashion by part of the OUNB milieu in Canada. He's being made out to be a Russian agent and a Soviet agent. This is part of the dynamic that I think really needs to be highlighted with regard to this bill. And that is that what they're doing is not, is elevating fascists and people who glorify fascists to the position of heroes and anti-communist heroes and so forth. And there is a very good blog called the Bandera blog that goes into the merciless red baiting of David Pugliese. But this comes from the Ottawa Citizen of October 7th of 2024. It is by David Pugliese, again, being outright red-baited as a Russian or Soviet agent by elements of the OUNB milieu in Canada. And it is just that very same OUNB milieu in the U.S. that gave rise to the Memorial of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation here in the U.S., an offshoot of the Captive Nations Committee, and that in turn is an offshoot of the OUNB. This again from the Ottawa Citizen of October 7th of 2024. Victims of Communism Memorial faces call to remove over 330 names linked to Nazis and fascists. The memorial was supposed to be unveiled in November of 2023, but that was put on hold after questions surfaced about many of the names listed. And the article reads, "The opening of a memorial to the victims of communism has been put on hold." And the article reads, "The Department of Canadian Heritage is being told that more than half of the 550 names on the memorial to the victims of communism should be removed because of potential links to the Nazis or questions about affiliations with fascist groups, according to government records. As originally planned, there would be 553 entries on the Ottawa Memorial's Wall of Remembrance. The department had determined that 50 to 60 of the names or organizations were likely directly linked to the Nazis, according to the documents obtained by the Ottawa Citizen through an access to information request. A 2023 report for Canadian Heritage recommended more than 330 names be excluded to be on the safe side, the records noted. The exclusions were recommended because of the lack of information about the individuals or organizations and whether they might have links to fascist organizations or the Nazis. Some of the entries could also be removed because they had no direct link to Canada. The memorial, which is located near the corner of Wellington and Bay Streets, is supposed to honor those who suffered under communism. But concerns have been raised over the years by Jewish organizations and historians that names of Eastern Europeans who collaborated with the Nazis in the Holocaust have been put forward in an attempt to whitewash their past. The memorial was supposed to be unveiled in November 2023, but that was put on hold after members of parliament honored Yaroslav Hunka, a Ukrainian soldier with the Waffen-SS Galicia Division, a voluntary unit that was under the command of the Nazis. That incident became an international embarrassment for Canada. By the way, as noted in the Alan McLeod article from Consortium News, among the people that are listed as victims of communism are people who have died from coronavirus pandemic, something like 8 million worldwide, over a million in the U.S., because that virus supposedly came from China. Again, I've done several overlapping series, the BioPsyop Apocalypse now morphing into the Oswald Institute of Virology, and the Pandemics Incorporated series covering roughly 2 years, and I've recently condensed the important parts of that research into an article for my Patreon platform. But again, it's all available for free on those various broadcasts. One of the interesting things about the coronavirus is that Peter Daszak, the head of the EcoHealth Alliance that was inextricably linked with the construction of those viruses, the coronaviruses, and again, I've spoken about that and Daszak at great length in the aforementioned overlapping series. It's in the Patreon article. But Daszak himself is of Ukrainian heritage. And his father apparently worked at a Nazi concentration camp when he was a young man. And the Daszak family are from the Lviv area in western Ukraine. That's where Galicia is. And one of the most notorious of the Nazi concentration camps was Yanoska. And being from the Lviv, where Yanoska was, it is altogether unlikely that the Nazis would have assigned Peter Daszak's father to a camp farther away in Ukraine. This raises the question, and it's no more than that, that was, in fact, Bohdan Daszak part of the extermination machine in some way at Yanoska? And is it possible that in the person of Peter Daszak, we are seeing part of the what might be called a Ukrainian paperclip, or perhaps even OUND manifestation? Again, clearly an interrogatory statement. Continuing with the David Pugliese article, Canadian Heritage spokesperson Carolyn Chazowski, C-Z-A-J-K-O-W-S-K-I, told the Ottawa Citizen that a new date for the memorial unveiling has not yet been set. Asked whether the more than 330 entries on the Wall of Remembrance will be removed, Sajowski replied, quote, "The review of the commemorative elements is ongoing," unquote. The main spokesman for Tribute to Liberty, the organization which advocated for the memorial, did not respond to a request for comment. Jamie Kurtzner Roberts, a senior director at the Friends of Simon Wiesenthal Center, said her Holocaust education organization has been raising concerns for years with Canadian Heritage regarding the potential inclusion of Nazi war criminals in the memorial. In 2021, we discovered that one particular Nazi leader was being honored by the memorial, and it took us more than a year of very active advocacy efforts before his name was finally removed, unquote, she said. Again, quoting, "We told officials repeatedly that we believed there could be a great number of Nazis being commemorated, but sadly this problem did not appear to be a priority for the department," unquote. Kirchner Roberts said the recent report commissioned by the department confirmed her organization's worst fears. It finds that more than half of the individuals commemorated in the memorial may have been Nazis or Nazi collaborators, she said one more time. Kirchner Roberts said the recent report commissioned by the department confirmed her organization's worst fears. Quote, it finds that more than half of the individuals commemorated in the memorial may have been Nazis or Nazi collaborators, unquote, she said. Again quoting, it is totally unacceptable for Nazis and collaborators to be honored by a Canadian public memorial, especially one meant to recognize victims of state violence and tyranny, unquote. Federal officials and other departments have continued to warn Canadian Heritage that the inclusion of Nazi collaborators on the memorial will cause international embarrassment, allowing the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation to help educate kids in the U.S. Should cause international embarrassment, but they probably won't. Again, quoting, it is important to note that many anti-communist and anti-Soviet advocates and fighters were also active Nazi collaborators who committed documented massacres, unquote, Global Affairs Canada officials warned their counterparts at Canadian Heritage in 2021. Private donations had already been made to the monument in the names of Nazi collaborators, the CBC reported in July of 2021. Those included Roman Shukevich, a Ukrainian nationalist and Nazi collaborator, as well as Ante Pavlic, who ran a Nazi puppet regime in Croatia and is considered a chief perpetrator of the Holocaust in the Balkans, the CBC reported. We'll come back to this in a second. Canadian Heritage officials were also voicing their own concerns in internal messages. Quote, it has come to our attention that a number of entries have been put forward for recognition. It has come to our attention that a number of entries that have been put forward for recognition may have been affiliated in some capacity to fascist and Nazi organizations, unquote, wrote Tristan E. Landry, a deputy director to the department. For example, some of the proposed individuals were linked to the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists and its military, the Ukrainian Insurgent Army, and to a lesser extent with Baltic nationalist groups, i.e. members of the Latvian SS, unquote. Kirchner Roberts said the Friends of Simon Wiesenthal-Sever is urging the federal government to implement new, rigorous vetting procedures so this type of situation does not happen again. The memorial to the victims of communism has already been the focus of multiple controversies over its exact purpose, location, size, and cost over the last 15 years. The price tag for the project has ballooned to an estimated $7.5 million, including $6 million in public funds from an original budget of $1.5 million that was supposed to be funded entirely through private donations from Tribute to Liberty. Well, again, first of all, Roman Shukevich. He was the head of the Einsatzgruppe Nachtigall that liquidated the Jewish ghetto and Lvov. And, again, many of the Jews that were liquidated in that ghetto, they were deported to work at the Yanoska concentration camp. And I think an important interrogatory note is whether Bojdan Dešek may have worked at Yanoska. He did, according to a book we've excerpted, work at a Nazi concentration camp as a young man. It is very unlikely that the Nazis would have put him to work at some other camp other than Yanoska, which was right out on the outskirts of Lvov. And again, Roman Shukevich led the Einsatzgruppe Nachtigall that liquidated the Jewish ghetto at Lvov. And Theodor Oberwanger, who was an SS officer, he was the political officer for the SS, for the Einsatzgruppe Nachtigall. The Einsatzgruppe, by the way, were the mobile Nazi killing squads that liquidated various ethnic and religious enemies of the Third Reich. And it would be impossible to exaggerate the extent to which the Einsatzgruppe leaders were ultimately incorporated, and many of the personnel, into the Galen organization. Shukevich was elevated to the position of a hero of Ukraine by not Viktor Yanukovych, but the fellow who whom he succeeded. Anyway, the government of Ukraine, there was a Viktor Yushchenko, by the way, who elevated Roman Shukhevich to being a hero of Ukraine, as he did Yaroslav Spetsko. Viktor Yushchenko's wife, the former Ekaterina Tymoshenko, had been deputy officer for public liaison under Ronald Reagan. She was a key element of the OUNB milieu in the U.S. She then married Viktor Yushchenko, who was the victim of the, quote, Orange Revolution, unquote, in Ukraine. And it is now a law in Ukraine that you cannot criticize the leaders of the OUNB, including Spetsko and Roman Shukhevich, as being anything other than fighters for Ukrainian independence. That is punishable by criminal, it's a criminal offense. And but Vladimir Vyatrovich was the head of the Institute for National Memory in Ukraine. He also was the Minister for Education in Ukraine. I think that is eerily resonant with the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation now drafting. Basically, they drew up an education program for kids in the U.S. who are going to be learning this stuff. One of the things that's interesting is Antti Pavlich, who was the Poglavnik, he was the Führer, basically, of the brutal Croatian collaborationist regime in Croatia during the Third Reich's occupation of what used to be Yugoslavia. Antti Pavlich was the Poglavnik, and the even the SS were horrified by what the Ustashi did at their various concentration camps there. Most notorious concentration camp was not Yanoska, but it was a converted brickyard, and the victims were herded into the kilns and burned alive. And the brutality of the Ustashi, again, it horrified even the SS. Pavlich gave Mussolini what Mussolini thought was a basket full of oysters. It actually was a basket full of Jewish eyeballs. And, the sheer horror of what the Ustashi did at the various concentration camps. And, one of the things that they did was that they had a throat-cutting contest one night, and the winner of that contest, one Peter Bezhika, I'm not sure how his name is pronounced, but he cut through 1,300 throats in a single night, which is quite a lot of cutting, boy. It's just unbelievable. And again, that Nazi concentration camp was co-managed by a couple of Dominican priests, as we noted in our conversations with Peter Lavenda about his remarkable book, The Hitler Legacy. The aforementioned Antti Pavlich was one of the Nazi collaborators who was helped to, he was spirited out of Europe by the Vatican-connected rat mines. At one point, and as we noted in one of our visits with the heroic John Lapis, Antti Pavlich was seen driving around a car in Rome with Vatican license plates. And again, he headed up the Nazi puppet regime in Croatia. And again, the sheer brutality of that regime is just remarkable. And again, to have Antti Pavlich elevated as an anti-communist hero. Well, this is what we can expect, basically, to, I think, get in the U.S. as an educational curriculum. We've got Linda McMahon, the former wrestling entrepreneur, as education secretary. That's going to be beautiful. I'm sure she'll really object to the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. One of the things that we looked at in connection with the very important book, The Murder of General Walker and the Assassination of, General Walker and the Assassination of John F. Kennedy. It's a very limited book, but this by Dr. Caulfield, C-A-U-F-I-E-L-D. But it disclaims any involvement by the CIA, but if one takes the time to unpack the entire book, and it's about 800 pages, you will find that it is replete with people who collaborated with the CIA, including the OUNB milieu. But Glenn Pinchback, who was an officer in the Operations Command at a fort in Fort Sill in Oklahoma, and David Ferry and others of the Nazis who, or Nazi sympathizers who were being investigated by Jim Garrison in New Orleans, he got a letter from Glenn Pinchback. And Glenn Pinchback, who had been intercepting mail, reading some of the mail, spoke about, quote, a Nazi plot gargantuan in scope to enslave America in the name of anti-communism. One more time, Glenn Pinchback noted that there was, quote, a Nazi plot gargantuan in scope to enslave America in the name of anti-communism. And again, that's in the very important, albeit deeply flawed book by Jeffrey Caulfield, Jim Walker and the Assassination of JFK. We've used that in For the Record Program 971, among others, and Monty has also unpacked research from that book as well. I think this bill is going to go a long way toward enslaving America in the name of anti-communism. It is surreal to see things like this. Finishing up this particular article again, Christian Roberts said the Friends of Simon Wiesenthal Center is urging the federal government to implement new, rigorous vetting procedures so this type of situation does not happen again. Well, he may even going to do it in the U.S., it doesn't appear. The memorial to the victims of communism has already been the focus of multiple controversies over its exact purpose, location, size, and cost over the last 15 years. The price tag for the project has ballooned to an estimated $7.5 million, including $6 million in public funds from an original budget of $1.5 million that was supposed to be funded entirely through private donations from Tribute to Liberty. And yet another really interesting article comes from The Intercept of December 5th of 2024. It's by Noah Hurwitz, H-U-R-O-W-I-T-Z. Just Say No. Congress considers neocon lesson plan to keep kids off communism, unquote. A Florida congresswoman is on a mission to stamp out Gen Z's growing support for left-wing ideas and is turning to a hardline neocon group for help in educating the youth on the, quote, evils of communism, unquote. I mean, you know, I can't stand this kind of life. It's not a neocon group, it's a Nazi group. It's not neocon at all. It's, again, there's nothing neo about these cons. It was a Nazi group. Continuing. In the latest front in the culture war over school curricula, the House of Representatives is set to vote Friday on a bill, quote, that would give a congressional stamp of approval for the lesson plans of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, a group closely linked to fervently hawkish corners of the foreign policy blob. That's BLOB, by the way. The Crucial Communism Teaching Act, also known as H.R. 55349, would direct the VOC Foundation to develop, that's the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, to develop an educational curriculum it could offer to school districts to help instruct students on atrocities, both historic and contemporary, carried out by communist regimes. Inspiration for the bill came to its sponsor, Representative Maria Elvira Salazar, Republican of Florida, when she learned of a 2020 survey published, as it so happens, by the Victims of Communism Foundation. They wouldn't lie, of course, showing that 28% of Gen Zers and 22% of millennials held favorable views of communism. The legislation, which Salazar explicitly modeled after a 2020 bill mandating the development of educational materials about the Holocaust, has largely flown under the radar, and response to it has been muted. But some Democrats in Congress have already raised concerns that the bill's monomaniacal focus on communism would leave out important lessons about other forms of repression. Quote, The bill neglects to mention our country's long history of using the label, quote, communism, unquote, to inflame, scare, and pit Americans against one another. Representative Bobby Scott, Democrat of Virginia, in a Rules Committee hearing on the bill Tuesday, quote, if we want students to examine the effect of communism on the world, it would be negligent not to warn against the dangers of the House Committee on American Activities. The vitriol of Joseph McCarthy, again, whose legal right-hand man, Roy Cohn, was the lawyer for and political mentor to Donald Trump in the 1970s and 1980s. One more time. If we want students to examine the effect of communism on the world, it would be negligent not to warn against the dangers of the House Committee on Un-American Activities, the vitriol of Joseph McCarthy, and the negative impact of the Red Scare on many innocent Americans, particularly those seeking racial progress in the civil rights era, unquote. In an attempt to round out the focus of the bill, Scott and other Democrats put forward an amendment that would add lessons about the dangers of fascism, but it was unanimously rejected by GOP committee members. Again, there's an entire sub-branch of the Republican Party that is not the Republican Ethnic Outreach Council. We've spoken about that before. Continuing. Despite the concerns of Democrats, the bill is expected to pass Friday with a healthy share of Democratic votes, according to Representative Chrissy Houlihan, H-O-U-L-A-H-A-N, Democrat of Pennsylvania. Quote, we will vote in favor of it, most of us, Democrats and Republicans, because it's sort of a no-brainer vote. I would add, it is a no-brainer vote for a different reason. More in fact, we will vote in favor of it, most of us, Democrats and Republicans, because it's sort of a no-brainer vote, unquote, said Houlihan, who declined to say how she would personally vote. Quote, of course, we should decry communism and teach our young people about it, unquote. I mean, people that Auntie Pavlich is a worthwhile figure. I mean, it's just absolutely wild that the curriculum, again, was presented, I think, quite effectively by Alan McLeod in that Consortium News article. And the enormity of this absolutely could not be exaggerated. But, again, having Auntie Pavlich as an anti-communist hero and Roman Shukevich. Oh, by the way, there was a celebration called Shukevich Fest, celebrating Roman Shukevich on the anniversary of the liquidation of the Lvov ghetto. It also happened to be Shukevich's birthday, but it is wild that Shukevich was being celebrated in a celebration in the city of Lvov. Again, that is just absolutely wild, but it's in keeping with what is happening. I noted in some of my discussion of the Ukraine war, that is under Joe Biden, that basically the Nazification of America has been completed in effect. Now you consider, you can't talk about what the OUNB is, but it's being cemented and institutionalized under Donald Trump. And this bill, again, this will mint public school students as Hitlerjugend. It is absolutely enormous. And Glenn Pinchback's observations to Jim Garrison about a Nazi plot gargantuan in scope to enslave America in the name of anti-communism. Well, here we go. And continuing with the Intercept article. The highest profile battles over education have in recent years taken the form of book bannings and frenzied fights for control of local school boards. But the introduction of right-wing teaching resources is another tactic, with curriculum designed by organizations such as PragerU making their way into schools in Florida and Oklahoma. The Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation has championed legislation passed in recent years in Arizona and Florida that requires early and consistent education on the evils of communism and would likely be well positioned to offer up its own curriculum as an easy way for schools to meet the new requirements for anti-communist education laid out in those states' legislation. In Florida, educational standards already mandated that such lessons begin in the seventh grade, but the new legislation, which Governor Ron DeSantis signed in April, calls for it to begin as early as kindergarten. At the VOC, the Victims of Communism Foundation, meanwhile, work on a broad anti-communist civics curriculum is already underway. On its website, the VOC Foundation lists lesson plans covering the origins of communism, including an exercise instructing teachers to, quote, take a student's favorite pencil or pen, backpack, phone, etc., unquote, and ask them to reflect on the confiscation of private property up to the eve of World War II. While the full curriculum about World War II is not yet published, a number of planned chapters are listed as, quote, coming soon, unquote. The material available so far shows a laser focus on the atrocities of communist forces, including repression of the clergy during the Spanish Civil War and the Katyn massacre of Polish prisoners. By the way, that may well be a false flag by Soviet troops during the German-Soviet partition of Poland. Bear in mind, this article's from The Intercept. And, you know, I don't generally like it. So this is a working press, so it has some decent information, but The Intercept itself and Glenn Greenwald are very painted indeed. Indeed, Glenn Greenwald himself, as an attorney, was running interference for various Nazi organizations, as we've looked at in the number of programs. For the record, ABBA among them. The VOC Foundation goes into visceral details about the abuses of communist governments, but its research and curriculum, much of which touches on atrocities of World War II, barely mention the horrors of the Holocaust and other evils carried out by non-communist forces. This hyper-focus on communist atrocities has long been the hallmark of right-wing historical projects, and it has landed the group's fellow travelers in the anti-communist movement in hot water in recent years. In Canada, a long-planned memorial for victims of communism, funded in part by taxpayer dollars, has come under fire for its celebration of fascist collaborators in Eastern Europe and the Balkans. The memorial's list of victims at one point included tributes to Ante Pavlich, the Nazi puppet who presided over the Holocaust in Croatia, and Roman Shukhevich, a Ukrainian nationalist who murdered tens of thousands of Jews and other minorities during the war. By the way, his son was also part of the Ukrainian guerrilla movement that really had its genesis with the Third Reich and its werewolf project, which was largely moribund, but was activated by Reinhard Gehlen in Ukraine to form the genesis of his RNet. And we spoke about that in For the Record programs 1228 and 1229, as well as AFA program number 1. And number 2 as well. That project, to be unveiled without any names for now on December 12th, after years of delays, has roots in post-war efforts to form a right-wing answer to the Communist International, according to Dan Boeckner, B-O-E-C-K-M-E-R, an independent researcher who has focused on the movement in Canada. Under the guise of promoting freedom, organizations like the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations often acted as a vehicle for fascist emigres to regroup and exploit Cold War tensions in the West to rewrite history in a way that would equate communist atrocities with the Holocaust, Boeckner said. They basically brain-poisoned an entire generation or two of Canadians into thinking that the Soviets were the bad guys during World War II, unquote, Boeckner told The Intercept. Skipping down. Founded in 1993 by Congressional Charter, the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation is an offshoot of the National Captive Nations Committee, a Cold War activist advocacy group led by prominent conservative intellectuals and proponents of, they're not conservatives. Lev Dobryansky and Yaroslav Spetsko are not conservatives. Well, this is the problem with the Intercept, and that's why I don't usually use articles about it. This does have some interesting things about it, but again, this is just, well, it's the Intercept being the Intercept. And I would note the following from the Sonar 21 blog of Larry Johnson. This is from December 18th of 2024. Alleged killer of General Kirillov arrested, but holes remain in the story. This is the general who's in charge of Russian chemical and biological and nuclear weaponry. And he also was the point man in discussing the biolabs in Ukraine, as we looked at in numerous programs. those biolabs were not only under Pentagon control, but Metabiota was shoehorned into those biolabs courtesy of Hunter Biden, who just was pardoned by his father. And Hunter Biden is implicated in Metabiota, which in turn is heavily implicated with the EcoHealth Alliance, headed up by Peter Daszak, and the synthesis of the coronaviruses that figure in the inquiry into COVID. I'm being very polite. But General Kirillov was basically a walking point about that. Now, he was assassinated allegedly by someone from Uzbekistan. That would suggest that the Ukrainian jihadist link, which we saw in, which we've seen in Syria, and we've talked about in various programs with ISIS fighters from Syria, working with Pravi Sector and fighting with Pravi Sector and some of the Nazi formations in Ukraine. And one of the things I found very interesting here, Larry Johnson was one of the very few people to mention the following. Press reports reveal that General Kirillov believed he was a target not just of Ukraine, but by the West because of his role in revealing the nefarious network of more than 40 U.S.-funded biological laboratories in Ukraine, and his belief that the U.S. used COVID as a biological weapon. Well, it's a hell of a lot more than just his belief. Continuing, in making this charge, he also accused U.S. pharmaceutical companies of being collaborators. And again, he mentioned that he alleged General Kirillov about made allegations about Moderna and Pfizer, both of which have been involved in the coronavirus vaccines, allegedly being involved in that research. But again, his assassination eliminates someone who was a point element in the inquiry into the biolabs in Ukraine and the Metabiota, which also heavily overlaps the formation of the EcoHealth Alliance and their work at what I call the Oswald Institute of Virology or the WIV, the Wuhan Institute of Virology. But again, Kirillov believed that the U.S. used COVID as a biological weapon. Well, he is not alone in that belief. But again, his assassination removes someone who could potentially be embarrassing to Joe Biden and Hunter Biden as they get maybe the hand of reins to Donald Trump. That's going to be really interesting. I mentioned last week that I'm not going to talk about Syria at any great length. I've spoken about that at some length. I will continue to do so on the Patreon platforms. Again, I have three talks a week on the Patreon platform, plus Zoom talks. I can do a lot more. But I would note that in the Full Record programs 1023, 1024, 1025, and 1026, all of them done in 2018, I spoke at length about the use of al-Qaeda forces, which I have in many programs in Syria, and directly foreshadowed what is going on now. Both ISIS and al-Qaeda are offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood. Muslim Brotherhood is an Islamic fascist organization allied with the Third Reich and fascist Italy. It also was used by both the CIA and the British intelligence for anti-communist purposes in the Cold War and continues to this day. Its chief economic theoretician, Ibn Khaldun, is cited by the World Bank as the role model for privatization. And so al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, however, Muslim Brotherhood is viewed with great favor by the transnational corporate community. Again, Ibn Khaldun, cited by the World Bank as a model of the first real advocate for privatization. Again, I've spoken about that in many shows, of the, for the record, 1023, 1024, 1025, and 1026. I want to note the following. And this is one of the articles that was in For the Record program number 1025. Again, that was recorded in 2018. This is titled Al-Qaeda's Resurrection. It's by Bruce Hoffman, who wrote for the Council on Foreign Relations from March 6th of 2018. One of the things that I've noted again, Arabs, the Arab Spring was being celebrated by the so-called progressive sector. It began with WikiLeaks, when, again, WikiLeaks is a far-right organization, as is Julian Assange, and, you know, the brain-dead acceptance of WikiLeaks by the so-called progressive sector really, I guess, is more or less routine. It was founded, according to leaked emails, by Russian and Chinese, quote, exiles and dissidents, unquote, that, again, inextricably linked with the CIA. Julian Assange himself appears to have been part of the Sepahkepnen Park Association, a mind control front in Australia. And one of his right-hand men was Yitzhak Shamir, a.k.a. Joran Jermas, a Russian-born Holocaust denier who arranged for WikiLeaks to hold forth on the Pirate Bay network that was owned or economically controlled by Carl Lindstrom, one of the founders of the Sweden Democrats that was originally an Odinist slash Nazi party, but it morphed into an anti-immigrant party. And the fellow that arranged for WikiLeaks to move to the Pirate Bay network was the aforementioned Joran Jermas. When this came out in a Guardian article, Julian Assange claimed he was the victim of an international Jewish conspiracy. That's something you should, that should set off warning of signals in people's brains. And the reason for that was because, well, the publisher of The Guardian was, quote, sort of Jewish, unquote, because he had a Jewish brother-in-law. Again, that should be a red flag, but not the so-called progressive sector. And the WikiLeaks network was set up using the Tor network developed by U.S. intelligence and completely transparent to U.S. intelligence. And Julian Assange's other right-hand man was, oh, I've forgotten his name off the top of my head, but he was, again, financed by the Free Asia Foundation, and basically a CIA derivative, and he basically was arranging for Julian Assange to do various things, including putting WikiLeaks on the Tor network. He also was instrumental in getting Edward Snowden to Hong Kong, where he helped to kick off Cold War II. By the way, I go into that at great length in the series on Surveillance Valley, a very, very important book written by Yasha Levine. And again, the WikiLeaks and the many intelligence connections to it, it could not be exaggerated. But the Arab Spring was also a U.S. intelligence operation, as I noted in the long series I did about the Arab Spring. It brought the Muslim Brotherhood to power in Egypt, and in turn that was instrumental in helping to rebirth Al-Qaeda. Again, I've spoken about the Muslim Brotherhood Spring in numerous programs. But to give you an idea of the extent to which this was covered, what's going on now in Syria, this, again, is from an article from the Council on Foreign Relations of March 6th of 2018 by Bruce Hoffman, Al-Qaeda's Resurrection, hardly a quote, leftist, unquote, organization. And he cites the Arab Spring as a key event in Al-Qaeda's resurgence. Quote, the thousands of hardened Al-Qaeda fighters freed from Egyptian prisons in 2012-2013 by President Mohamed Morsi galvanized the movement at a critical moment when instability reigned and a handful of men well-versed in terrorism and subversion could plunge a country or a region into chaos. Whether in Libya, Turkey, Syria, or Yemen, their arrival was providential in terms of advancing Al-Qaeda's interests or increasing its influence. It was Syria where Al-Qaeda's intervention proved most consequential. Ayman al-Zawahiri, the former head of Al-Qaeda, and by the way, his brother was a key Muslim Brotherhood advisor to Morsi, one of Zawahiri's first official acts after succeeding bin Laden as emir was to order a Syrian veteran of the Iraqi insurgency named Abu Muhammad al-Julami to return home and establish the Al-Qaeda franchise that would eventually become Jabhat al-Nusra. Hoffman notes that Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State were at one part of a unified organization. Again, quoting, Al-Qaeda's chosen instrument was Jabhat al-Nusra, the product of a joint initiative with Al-Qaeda's Iraqi branch, which had rebranded itself as the Islamic State of Iraq. But as Nusra grew in both strength and impact, a dispute erupted between ISI and Al-Qaeda over control of the group. In a bold power grab, ISI's leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, announced the forcible amalgamation of all Nusra, of al-Nusra with ISI and a new organization called the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS. Jawlami, that's the aforementioned Muhammad, Abu Muhammad al-Jawlami, Jawlami refused to accede to the unilateral merger and appealed to Zawahiri. The quarrel intensified, and after Zawahiri's attempts to mediate it collapsed, he expelled ISIS from the Al-Qaeda network. Now, that was 2018, and talked about in at length and for the record, 1025 and 1026, among others. Now, let's jump to the aforementioned Sonar 21 blog of the aforementioned Larry Johnson. This from Sonar 21 of December 20th of 2024. That is yesterday. And it's just absolutely wild. Again, remember what we read in this Bruce Hoffman article. It was Syria where Al-Qaeda's infiltration, this is from 2018, and in for the record 1025 from 2018, it was Syria where Al-Qaeda's intervention proved most consequential. You bet. One of Zawahiri's first official acts after succeeding bin Laden as emir was to order a Syrian veteran of the Iraqi insurgency named Abu Muhammad al-Julami, J-U-L-A-N-I, to return home and establish the Al-Qaeda franchise that would eventually become Jabhat al-Nusra. Well, yes indeed. Now, skipping ahead to December 20th, of 2024 from the Sonar 21, but again, a very conservative blog by a quote, ex-unquote, CIA analyst. And he's a superb fellow, but he also has some good material in his blog. That's why, I give the strong caveat, but again, I do use material from that. Continuing. This post by Larry Johnson. Biden administration admits the global war on terror is total BS. Well, it is BS, so we've used these people again. ISIS, and ISIL and Al-Qaeda are offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood. And again, the World Bank loves the Muslim Brotherhood. It is a corporatist organization, and hence its proliferation in the Islamic world, courtesy of CIA, British Intel, and others. And Larry Johnson writes as follows. After today's events in Syria, U.S. credibility as a major player in the global war on terrorism, Islamic terrorism to be precise, is destroyed. That was a long time before then, but despite spending 10 years on the U.S. list of bad terrorists and earning a $10 million bounty on his head, Abu Muhammad al-Jawlami welcomed a U.S. delegation led by Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs Barbara Leaf to the Nasser. That's the same guy. I think of some of the transliterations of these Muslim names vary, but again, it was Syria where Al-Qaeda's intervention, from the Bruce Hoffman article in 2018, it was Syria where Al-Qaeda's intervention proved most consequential. One of Zawahiri's first official acts after succeeding bin Laden as emir was to order a Syrian veteran of the Iraqi insurgency named Abu Muhammad al-Jawlami to return home and establish the Al-Qaeda franchise that would eventually become Jabhat al-Nusra. Again. Despite spending 10 years on the U.S. list, I've been reading from the Larry Johnson blog, despite spending 10 years on the U.S. list of bad terrorists and earning a $10 million bounty on his head, Abu Muhammad al-Jawlami welcomed the U.S. delegation led by Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs Barbara Leaf to Damascus. She was accompanied by former U.S. envoy to Syria Daniel Rubenstein, who will stay in Syria as a top she was accompanied by former U.S. envoy to Syria, Daniel Rubenstein, who will stay in Syria as the top U.S. diplomat on the ground. Leaf greeted Jawlami with the news that the U.S. was lifting the, quote, $10 million bounty, unquote, as long as Jawlami pinky swore, quote, to not allow terrorist organizations to operate within Syrian territory or pose threats to the U.S. or neighboring countries, unquote. That is quite something. Again, that's the same guy who was ordered. It's just contrasting 2018. Again, from the CFR, that's hardly a leftist organization. It was Syria where al-Qaeda's intervention proved most consequential. Amen to that. One of Zawahiri's first official acts after succeeding bin Laden as emir was to order a Syrian veteran of the Iraqi insurgency named Abu Muhammad al-Juwani to return home and establish the al-Qaeda franchise that would eventually become Jabhat al-Nusra. And then here we go. Despite, again, from December 20th, from the Somar 21 blog of Larry Johnson, despite spending 10 years on the U.S. list of bad terrorists and earning a $10 million bounty on his head, Abu Muhammad al-Jawami welcomed the U.S. delegation led by Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs Barbara Leaf to Damascus. She was accompanied by former U.S. envoy to Syria Daniel Rubenstein, who will stay in Syria as the top U.S. diplomat on the ground. Leaf greeted Jawami with the news that the U.S. was lifting the $10 million bounty as long as Jawami pinky swore, quote, to not allow terrorist organizations to operate within Syrian territory or pose threats to the U.S. or neighboring countries, unquote. And again, the remaking of a terrorist into a good guy. And again, basically, the al-Qaeda, like ISIS, are offshoots of the fascist, the Islamic fascist organization, the Muslim Brotherhood. Again, it is surreal. And with the program, the educational curriculum being crafted by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, it's absolutely surreal. You'll see something similar on a mass scale in the U.S., where basically the Nazis were good guys, you know? And that, by the way, is something that I discussed at length in the many, many, many programs where I've discussed the Nazi trap Serpent's Walk, which talks about the SS going underground after World War II. They did. Building up their economic muscle. They did. Buying into the opinion-forming media. They did. And ultimately, after martial law is declared following a terrorist act of using weapons of mass destruction, they take over the country. What Glenn Pinchback spoke about with, quote, a Nazi plot gargantuan in scope to enslave America in the name of anti-communism is very, very much underway. Please get the 64-gigabyte, and I go again, 64-gigabyte flash drive that contains all of my 45-plus years written and broadcast work, plus the comments by Parafractal, a mini library of old anti-fascist books on easy-to-download PDF files. Please get it, because things are going straight to hell. And that you can explain to whoever will listen to you what happened with that flash drive. Again, I get no money whatsoever from that. This concludes From the Record Program number 1367, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, Part 2. This is being recorded on December 21st of the year 2024. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.